This edition of the Monocle Weekly was first broadcast on the 15th of June 2014 on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to episode 258 of the Monocle Weekly with me, Robert Bounds, and Tom Edwards. We've got a great show for you today. We'll be ditching the travel guides and getting a first-hand look at the real Indonesia with author Elizabeth Pisani.
And we'll speak to the journalist and author Venora.
Welcome back to the Monocle Weekly with me, Robert Bounds, and Tom Edwards. Now, Indonesia is a nation of contrast. Jakarta is a sprawling metropolis with high-rise towers and millions of people crammed into an overcrowded space. But head out into the Sumatran forests and you'll find superstition, ancient rituals and black magic.
The country is spread across more than 13,000 islands. One in 30 people on the planet is Indonesian. It's as diverse as you might think. The investigative journalist Elizabeth Pisani set out across the country to discover the real Indonesia. And along the way, she met with a presidential candidate who keeps a posse of albino dwarfs to those that want to ban Lady Gaga. Those are just a few of the stories Elizabeth writes about in her new book entitled Indonesia, Etc. And we're delighted that she joins us now. Elizabeth, thanks for being on the show. I mentioned there this huge number of islands, a huge number of people and spread over this incredible area. I just wonder how difficult it is to characterise a country that is so disparate. What are the strands that pull it all together? Did you have a fair idea of what they'd be before you started writing the book?
I first started working in Indonesia in, God, this is going to age me, isn't it, in the late 80s. So I've been thinking about this for quite a long time, and I have to say, having worked there on and off for 20 years, having lived there for 8 years, and having spent the last 13 months travelling around the outer islands, I'm not that much closer to knowing what those strands are. I mean, it really, the diversity is so extraordinary. You've got sort of, in the far west, very, very heavily Arab-influenced Muslims with very Arab characteristics in their features, in their cuisine. And then in the Far East, you've got Melanesians who are black-skinned, curly-haired, nominally Christian, still extremely tribal, and everything in between. So it's really quite interesting when we're thinking about nationhood to think what makes all of those people Indonesian. The single characteristic that really is most spread across the nation is hospitality. The Indonesians are the most hospitable people on the planet, I think, which makes it a very easy place to travel.
And it's an interesting thing. You talked about the spread, the disparity of race, belief, and obviously the geography. It's a huge country. It's an amazingly wide country. Do people in the West and the people in the East think of themselves as Indonesians? Is it a sort of a monoculture, at least in that sense?
Not at all. They do think of themselves as Indonesians when the national football team is playing against Malaysia, but that's just about the only time. It's a bit like, you know, you get Andy Murray being Scottish until he's winning Wimbledon and then he's British. It's slightly that. It's almost become more disparate recently because, as I'm sure you know, Indonesia was very heavily centralized under a 32-year dictatorship, which ended in the late 1990s. So President Suharto, who'd been in power for over 30 years, was pushed out. And since then, there's been this phenomenal blossoming of democracy. And part of that has been this decentralization. So all the local cultures, which had been sort of forced into a national mold during the Suharto years, are now rediscovering their traditions and sometimes reinventing them. It's quite funny. You go out to an island in the middle of the Maluku Islands in eastern Indonesia, for instance, and you'll see these strange dances and rituals and music, and you'll ask the old people, so tell me about this, and they're like, I think the culture department made it up so that we could have our own festival. I mean, it's that sort of... it's a blossoming, but it's certainly being helped along for political reasons.
Elizabeth, tell us something about some of the characters you meet along the way. We sort of alluded to some of them in the introduction. It's an incredible cast of characters, I guess, inevitably, when you talk about the sort of diversity of people that you're going to meet. I wonder, as you were doing your travels and talking with them, were there moments when you really felt you met somebody who was, if you like, the real embodiment of what it was to be in Indonesian? Were there perfect moments that you felt, wow, when I commit this to the page, this will go some way to kind of encapsulate what I'm trying to bring across to people?
Tragically, there are 240 million different encapsulations because people are so different. But as I said before, hospitality is a really key thing, and helpfulness. It was one very, very funny time when I was traveling. I traveled mostly alone for a year, and just for a couple of weeks, I had a friend with me who's a French criminologist who works in the Jakarta nightlife. And we were in the eastern island of Sumba, and we wanted to witness these ritual jousting sessions. So villages, all the young men of villages get up on their horses, and they joust in these great swirling circles, and where the circles intersect, they try and essentially kill one another. And it goes back to an ancient tradition where spilling blood guarantees a good harvest and all this colorful thing. So it was very wonderful and colorful, but finally my friend was like, you know what, I'm on holiday and I just want to go to the beach. Fair enough, he's been indulging me with all this sort of esoteric culture. So we go back to the motorbike that we've driven 45 kilometers off the nearest serviceable road to get to this jousting place. And he's lost the key. No key. So we're on a four-acre site with hundreds of people stampeding horses. No, we haven't been sitting down anywhere. He's like, oh, which bush did I pee behind? Which lady did I buy some water from? You know, desperately trying to retrace our steps to find the key to this motorbike. It was worse than a needle in a haystack. So finally, we just decided to do what we both knew best. As a criminologist, he's looking for the toughest crim-looking guy around so that he can hotwire the bike. And I just go up to the local chief of police, who's there as one of the local dignitaries, and say, oh, I'm so sorry, it's so embarrassing, but this has happened, blah, blah, blah. And the local chief of police calls back. Everyone's already beginning to leave. He calls the truck with all the cops back from the road, says, can you help them, please? We load up into the truck. We go, they say, which is your bike? We point out the motorbike. They lift the motorbike into the police truck, drive us back to town, and take us to someone who will make a fake key for us. And you're like, wow, in which country in the world will the cops help you steal your bike? And the funny, when we did it, Jerome looks across at me, he's French, and he said to me in French, do you know, we should have chosen a nicer bike.
Yeah. Yeah, mine's the Bentley. It sounds like a very encouraging thing that Indonesians are so friendly to foreigners, reporters, to you writing a book or just being a tourist. Are they friendly to each other? You mentioned the sort of east-west, not necessarily a divide, but are they friendly to each other?
That's an interesting question. In general, and the reason I think that people are so friendly is that it's a string of islands that runs between the two great manufacturing and trading hubs of the world historically, between China and India. So since the beginning of time, there have been traders coming through on ships, and they go between islands. And so people are very, very accustomed to seeing foreigners, including, you know, now these foreigners would be called Indonesians, but people from other islands, people with other religions, people with other colors and other languages. People are used to that diversity, and it goes on now in Indonesia. There's a lot of internal migration, but not just recently, it's been going on for some time, but increasingly recently, there have been clashes between people who are migrants from other islands within Indonesia and people who are rooted in the soil of a certain island. So in some of the large islands, such as Kalimantan, which is the Indonesian part of Borneo Island, there have been some quite nasty clashes between the indigenous Dayak populations and some of the immigrant populations who've come from other islands to seek their fortune. So there is always this possibility for friction. It usually occurs when a group of people from another island with new technology, with new ideas, who are prepared to work harder because they're immigrants. It's the immigrant experience the world over, I think. But it's interesting in Indonesia because it's all within one country. So just as in London, you're complaining about Polish plumbers if you're a British plumber who likes to have a tea break every 20 minutes. It's sort of the same thing, except in Indonesia, your Polish plumbers are also Indonesians.
And in terms of its image of itself, is that, obviously there's a lot of, as always, there's a lot of sort of nationalism springing up all over the world. And is that, how safe a concept and as a cogent sort of unity is Indonesia, do you think, therefore?
I think, as is often the case with nationalism, it surfaces when it's challenged. So if you ask most Indonesians where they're from, they'll tell you their ethnic group or their island. I'm Javanese, I'm Minangkabau, or whatever it is. But if you challenge them, if there's a challenge to Indonesia's dignity or identity, for example, there are quite often spats with neighboring Malaysia, or there's a huge population of Indonesians who work overseas in the Middle East, particularly, both as domestic and as construction workers. And if there's a story of an Indonesian construction worker or domestic worker being mistreated, for example, in Saudi, then there's a huge national solidarity. Also, when something happens in Indonesia itself, for example, with the tsunami of 2004, which really hit just the far western provinces in Aceh and North Sumatra, there was a huge coming together of the nation around that real need of just one part of the population. So I think the nationalism is there, but it's not very evident most of the time. It only sort of surfaces with a challenge, which is not necessarily a bad thing, is it?
Elizabeth, you obviously have such a sort of deep knowledge and understanding of the country that you've garnered from your time there and from your travels. I just wonder, looking to the future, is it going to be, do you think, a story of similar contrasts and similar tensions, maybe the tensions between old and new, modern and ancient, because you have these extraordinary metropolitan areas, you know, big, huge cities, mega hubs like Jakarta, and then you have this, you know, often this very, a lot of ancient tradition and this kind of thing. Are they going to be in clashing forces, do you think, as the country changes and develops, or do you think it's actually a place that's rather well set and actually very sort of at ease with itself and what it's becoming?
I think it is remarkably at ease. Indonesians have a remarkable ability to be flexible and essentially to hold two ideas in their head at any one time. So there's people who are working in super modern conditions with a Western education and who come out with these superstitions, or who, when they're back in their family environment, fall back into rituals that you'd think, wow, I would have thought you would have given that up. Just as some very good scientists are also, are strong Christians, for example, or strong Catholics, and you think, gosh, isn't it odd that you can believe that you're eating the body and blood of Christ while you're working on DNA, whatever. The Indonesians are very able to hold multiple worldviews at the same time, and I think that will probably allow the nation to be quite resilient as it moves forward. It's really delightful that there's these different worlds sort of coexisting, often in the same place at the same time. So you have people who are chanting in a language that is understandable only to the high priests, and other people who are recording that on their cell phones and then going to sleep playing the chants to themselves on their cell phones. You think, that's quite a good coexistence of ancient and modern, I would have thought.
I think that sums it up nicely. Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us on The Weekly. The book is Indonesia, Etc., Exploring the Improbable Nation. It's published by Grant, and it's very personal and universal, I think. Elizabeth Pisani, thank you very much for joining us.